UW Madison freshman from Wisconsin who received federal Pell Grants could see nearly all costs paid by the university. It's Friday, February 10th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning. I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, Anya Van Wagtendonk reports on a resolution aimed at honoring Black History Month. And Danielle Kading tells us about an upcoming festival known as the Indigenous Olympics. Stay with us.
You tune into Wisconsin Public Radio for news you can trust, conversations that draw you in, and music and entertainment that make your day better. The largest source of funding for everything you value on WPR is listener support. Join the team that makes WPR possible. Become a sustaining member. Make an ongoing monthly gift and share WPR with your entire community. It's easy to sign up at WPR.org.
UW Madison freshman from Wisconsin who received federal Pell Grants could see nearly all costs paid by the university. That's through a program announced this week called Bucky's Pell Pathway. Chancellor Jennifer Mnookin says the goal is to have students with significant financial need graduate without any debt. The university estimates more than 800 freshmen will be eligible next year. Mnookin says the initiative goes beyond a similar program known as the Bucky's Tuition Promise.
This means not only tuition and fees, which is what Bucky's Tuition Promise promises, but also housing, room and board, meals, books, additional funds to allow these students to be involved and engaged.
Mnookin says the program will be funded by donations and institutional revenues, not tax dollars. State lawmakers are moving forward with a resolution to honor Black History Month. As Anya Van Wagtendonk reports, what was once a February tradition that received little attention has generated conflict in recent years.
This year's resolution by the Legislative Black Caucus recognizes prominent Black Wisconsinites. Three Republicans have signed on, which is notable after years of partisan back and forth. Caucus Chair Dora Drake, a Democratic Assemblywoman from Milwaukee, says the point is to honor Black history, regardless of the resolution's legislative odds.
In terms of the possibility of getting it passed, obviously I think the truth, is that in the last couple of years, Republicans have not pushed this resolution forward.
In 2019, Republicans balked at the inclusion of Milwaukee-born Colin Kaepernick, the former NFL quarterback who was an outspoken activist against police brutality. Kaepernick's name is not included in this year's resolution. Anya Van Wagtendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The city and county of Milwaukee recently received millions from a multi-state settlement with opioid companies. Milwaukee County has already allocated $11 million from the settlement towards 15 projects over the next 3 years. The city is still deciding how to use its sum of $18 million. One program that it could go towards is the Milwaukee Overdose Response Initiative. Paramedics with the Milwaukee Fire Department follow up the next day with people they've treated for overdoses. Captain Gregory Miller said that team helped 68 people get into treatment last year.
More than 50% of the individuals that we go to see are over the age of 40. We found that interesting. You think it'd be a younger group. That's not the case.
There were an estimated 678 overdose deaths in the county last year. If that estimate stands, it would be the fourth year in a row of record deaths. Tribal members will descend on a Lake Superior island this weekend for what's been dubbed the Indigenous Olympic Games. Danielle Kading reports the games returned to the island last year after being banned more than 150 years ago.
On Saturday, tribal members from across the region will make their way to the island to take part in the Muning Wanakaning Manis Intertribal Snow Snake Festival. Tribes play snow snake during the winter. Members compete to see who can throw wooden javelins, known as snow snakes, the farthest. Paul DeMaine is a festival organizer and member of the Oneida Nation. He says the return of what he calls the Indigenous Olympics is part of efforts to restore tribal language, lands, and culture.
The revival of snow snakes is just another component that's coming back into their community and thriving and growing and understanding what it all meant.
The federal government banned the games on the island years ago due to wagering around them. Betting was illegal at the time. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know you can count on WPR for news that's important, music that makes your day better, and conversations that make you think. We hope you'll make a financial contribution to support the radio service you rely on. And in fact, we count on it. The single largest portion of our budget comes from listener support. If you're not a member yet, make a gift of any amount today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCullum with a story about leaving home and finding a new one.
In the mid-1970s, Lisa Chutow and her family had to leave their whole world behind. Their farm, their friends, their home. They lived in northwest Laos, and the horrors of war were creeping in. So they started walking and ended up in a refugee camp. In the 1980s, Lisa moved to Eau Claire and raised her family there. She shares that experience in this essay, which is read by her daughter, Yia Lore.
When I walk along the Chippewa River, I'm reminded of another river in a place I once called home. Although thousands of miles away, Guqingdao, I have not forgotten the dirt path I walked to fetch water. I have not forgotten the stream that followed me to the garden. I have not forgotten my Hmong village in Laos. When it happened, I was too young and didn't know what to make of it. What child can piece together the meaning of war? My family lived in Sayanbili province. We were farmers and knew little about the world outside our village or the war that had begun before I was ever born. One December night in 1974, some relatives came to say they were leaving. The war was coming. They tell you the. Despite this news, my family stayed. We cut trees to prepare for our garden. We burned the land and planted rice. We were farmers after all. Then in April of 1975, many Hmong people came to rest along the road by our house. They carried with them their belongings and they delivered the same message. We cannot stay. We must go. The war is here. I was 9 at the time. My parents handed me my 2-year-old sister and asked that I carry her while they carry the rest of our belongings. Whatever we could not bring would be left behind. I tried to carry my sister but could not. My parents handed me some belongings instead, but they were too heavy. Feeling the weight of the world on my shoulders, I cried. I cried because I could not carry my sister. I cried because I could not carry our belongings. And I cried because I could not carry the life I only knew. We left our village with hundreds of other Hmong people and never looked back. The paths in the jungles that we walked had already been paved by the hundreds that came before us. As we carried on, we cried. In October of 1976, we finally crossed the border into Thailand. It was in a refugee camp where I spent the rest of my youth trying to make sense of my past and look to the future. It was also here where I married my husband. One day, he suggested we apply for resettlement. We had an 11-month-old son and decided we would go for our little family. We would go for those who have yet to come. With that decision, we became names and numbers written on a chalkboard, paperwork filed away, a statistic, the aftermath of war, perhaps the forgotten. Then in 1987, we were sponsored by a Catholic diocese and left behind the land we first called home, a place where we played as kids, farmed and fell in love, and witnessed the death of those waiting for freedom. America became my new home, and Wisconsin's snow-covered hills and cornfields replaced the jungles and rice fields of Laos. I have tried to find my Hmong village on a map, but it is not labeled like Eau Claire. The river that ran through it is not drawn with a thin blue line like the Chippewa River. Perhaps my village and its river no longer exist, but Guqingdao. I remember the dirt path I walked to feed our chickens and pigs. I remember the teapot we used to boil water from the stream. Thousands of miles and over 50 years later, Guqingdao.
That was Eau Claire writer Yia Lore reading an essay written by her mother, Lisa Chutow, who also lives in Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCullum.
Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Our producers are John Davis and Bridget Bowden. Catch us wherever you get your podcasts every weekday morning, and you can always find more news anytime at WPR.org. We'll talk to you again on Monday.